Hey, Tanya, did you dial in? Good evening, everyone. I'd like to welcome you to tonight, February 7th, 2022, regular city council meeting. You'd all please rise for a short private invocation, asking for God's blessing upon this city and wisdom as our city council makes its decisions. And now, if you'll please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
As I go to roll call tonight, Mark Snyder and Corey Everett asked to be excused, and I believe Maria is present via telephone. Maria? Maria, are you on the call? Okay. So I'd entertain a motion to excuse the council members.
I'll make a motion to excuse Councilman Everett and Snyder.
Second.
Thank you. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Will now be recorded.
All opposed? Motion carried. I'd like to move to item 1E, citizen input. Is there any citizen here tonight who would like to address the city council? Please raise your hand. I'll give you up to 5 minutes. Okay, seeing none, I'll move to item 2, which is the approval of our agenda tonight.
Make that motion.
Thank you. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carried. I'd like to move to item 3, which is our consent agenda. I entertain a motion to approve tonight's consent agenda.
I'll make that motion.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. So let's go to our current business. And the first item of discussion is Western Display fireworks for the 4th of July. Before the council tonight is a proposed contract for $15,000. We had budgeted $13,000 in our budget process, but I also had realized that we've had that same amount for the last 5 years, and I thought that we'd get a bit more show. I talked to Heather Gobay, the president of Western Display, and I think there was a question the council had asked, is that if we do both shows, would we get some additional? She did promise additional for the an additional $2,000 for the worth of fireworks for the holiday Christmas event. I think we had approved a budget amount of $10,000 this last year for that event, and Councilman Everett had asked that we continue to do that. So I'll present that contract at a later date, but she has promised an additional $2,000 worth of fireworks for that show. So before the council tonight, you have the ability to adopt at the $13,000 level, the $15,000 level. It's just up to you what direction you want to go.
So the $15,000 has given us that $2,000 extra for Christmas.
No.
No.
It's just extra for 4th.
Yeah.
So we'll just get an extra $2,000 at Christmas.
Yes.
Okay.
Second.
Thank you. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Now I'd like to move to item 4B, which is a lab quote for Owl Creek testing. And tonight we have with us our level 2 wastewater treatment operator, Jim Laird.
Good evening.
Jim, you had been working with Shannon from Tetra Tech to get us You want to go through your presentation, please?
Sure, it's short, simple. So this is basically phase two of Owl Creek. We've done the sediment sampling, which I was here last time for. Now we're going to test the waters, upstream, downstream, and at the outfall. It's a series of 10 monthly tests, and I believe you guys have copies of the quotes. And Shannon did this, the legwork on this, and found two bidders, Anatech Lab and Edge Analytical. Our local lab declined to bid. Anatech came in at $35,340, and Edge was $41,640, so we're recommending we go with Anatech for these tests. It's a one and done after 10 months, so, for our permit.
Right, so this, this lab, which we were searching for somebody who would actually do this work, this sampling analysis for us was, took a while. And this is the work that they're going to do is part of our MPDES permit, as you stated.
Correct.
Okay, so council, do you have any questions for Jim?
Is state certified?
Yes.
I'll make a motion to accept the quote amount of in $35,340 from Anatech Lab.
I'll second that motion.
Okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried.
Thank you, guys.
Further work was needed on sewer lining, and so Sean O'Brien, our city engineer, is here to talk about a bid summary for the balance of the sewer lining that is needed. Maybe you could give the council an update, Sean.
Sure. What you have before you is we've put out our 2022 sewer lining project. It's going to do a little over, right around 28,000 feet of sewer pipe. This is going to be addressing all of the lines that were installed prior to 1953. So it's addressing our oldest lines. The project that just finished up from last year was addressing all of our lines that had infiltration and in areas of high groundwater. So with this project, I think we'll have over half our concrete sewer lines lined. And so in the next two or three years, or next two or three projects, we should have all of our sewer lines lined if we continue to go that way from council's direction. So we received five bids. The lowest bid was PEC, who is the contractor that just completed our 2021 project. And they were a little bit over the insurance estimate, right in the ballpark. And the other four bidders were much higher in varying degrees. So I can answer any questions, but staff's recommendation is to award the project to PEC out of Helena, Montana. Yes.
Because they were quite a bit lower on the first
one. They were quite a bit lower on the first one, too. So it's
a... super low like that.
Well, and these numbers, they really weren't super low. I think both times the energy estimate's been underneath them, but just the lack of workers, they have a hard time filling their crews, and there's a lot of projects out there. So they've been able to, I think their bids are just are higher than what... they typically are because demand is high and workers are in short supply.
Make a motion to raise the sewer line contract in the amount of $838,636.56.
Second.
To PEC.
To PEC.
Yeah, thank you. Any further
Second.
Discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. And now I'd like to move to item 4D, which is the water system telemetry SCADA evaluation contract.
Okay. So what you have before you is an amendment to our professional services agreement with Varela. We're kind of using Varela because we have an existing contract with them, but this started with Abner talking to CASNY, who is working on our current wastewater treatment plant SCADA work on the sewer side, And so by talking with him, he's trying to figure out, you know, he has security issues, making sure that when we upgrade our SCADA system on the water side, that we have, we're meeting current up-to-date security as far as making sure no one can hack into our system and everything. And through our talks with them, they just said, you know, they could do a kind of a proposal on what would be needed to review our system and help us with the right terminology and summarizing what work's going to be needed when we do put a contract out to upgrade our system. And with consulting work, if we were going to go out, if we're going to select CASNY directly, we would have to advertise, go through a process, selection process, and take time. And so the quickest solution was to go ahead and just work through Varela and have them do an amendment to the Varela's agreement, which will include some markup costs, and but that is costs that we would have to, that we would be spending as far as doing an advertisement and spending time and wasting time with other consultants or wasting CASNY's time that they already kind of invested with us in putting together kind of a proposal for doing this work. So our recommendation is to do this amendment with Varela's agreement, with the existing agreement with Varela, and then we'll be working through, working with CASNY to get the information we need to put a spec out for upgrading our SCADA, which is something that we've put some of our ARPA money towards, and our SCADA system is on its last leg. We actually, about 3 or 4 weeks ago, it went down, and Abner, he wasn't able to get it working again, and they just turned it off and turned it back on, and it rebooted and worked. So, but he's like, I didn't do anything. It was just, I mean, I think they had tried shutting down several times, but it did boot up. So we're wanting to get this going as quickly as possible.
So you guys want to bring up the other document, the amendment? Yeah. Okay, so we're using Varela. The total amount is $17,630. Their markup looks to be about $3,100. So if you want to slide down to CASNY's, keep going, a few pages. There, CASNY's fee is, I believe, okay, there's his scope of services there.
Next page, it's $14,550.
Yeah, that's his. The markup is Varela, so that we don't, you know, so that we don't have to go through another RFQ in order to do that. We can, Varela's willing to do that. So basically, if we go back up just the next page, this is what he's going to do for us. And, you know, and I guess that goes into the next page. So if you guys are agreeable with that, we would, I would entertain a motion to approve this Schedule K contract amendment with Varela for, I believe it was $17,630.
Yep. Correct.
Okay. Council?
I'll make the motion to approve the amendment.
With Varela?
Yep, with Varela. Dated March 23rd, 2015, in amount $17,630.
I'll second. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Yes.
What type of PLCs do we have?
I am not exactly sure. Not all of our sites even have PLCs, so if I recall right, but that I can look into that and get that information to you.
So, like, those things need to be continuously updated. Right now, we're on PLC 5, and all the PLCs we had before that are being upgraded to PLC 5. Part of the reason is you can't get replacement parts for the old PLCs anymore. So I think we should be looking at upgrading the network, the PLC network,
And that's something, this work that CASNY, they're going to look at all of our remote sites, the wells and the reservoirs, and determine, you know, what, most of them, we'll get them all into the same PLC. And like in Allen Bradley, there are certain ones that have been out there for decades, but there is always more newer technology out there. But that's why we're kind of, it's not my expertise, and I don't think it's our water department's expertise, but...
Yeah, we got to where we were saving components out of ones we were removing so that we could keep things running.
And
if it came to it, but when you say the system shut down and you guys didn't know what to do, just rebooted it.
Right.
And it finally came back on. There could be an issue with PLC.
Well, it's the on-spec system, which it's the laptop and the software that's on the laptop that's used to communicate, coordinate all of those PLCs together is the one. So I think all the remote sites were working, but they just didn't have anything saying, hey, send me your information, and then relaying that to the water department. So it's the software that tells us the well to turn on when the reservoir gets too low. They were in the point where they were going to have to go out there and be just hand off, you know, turning wells on and off by hand. No, we do not want to do that. And
get the whole system looked at.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's time.
Get another project going to look at the whole system to make sure that that doesn't happen.
Yes.
That's what we want to do. Okay. So I'll ask for a revote on that again. So all those in favor of the motion to for $17,630 for Varela on this, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Okay, so now I'd like to go to item 4E, which is a repeal and replace resolution. City Council, Park and Rec Committee, and Madison have been going back and forth on this schedule. And Madison, I think you've reached some agreement with the committee. Do you want to review that tonight?
Yes, please. So tonight I'm here to ask Council for a motion to adopt Resolution 2022-01, repealing and replacing Resolution 2018-02, adopting changes to the Parks and Recreation fee schedule. So too often when a special event gets canceled, the time and scheduling to prepare and coordinate these events by city staff have already been established and in process. So we'd like to include a processing fee to the special event application. It would be presented as a $150 non-refundable processing fee that's due at the time of application, and it will be applied towards the total cost of the event at the end. Another change to 2018-02. So in efforts to alleviate the expenditures of maintaining and preserving the city's recreational facilities, staff has also recommended a $500 damage deposit fee to the special event and Lions Park Athletic Complex tournament/league rental applications. Continuously, we ran into issues where damage is caused to our facilities or extra garbage that staff has had to dispose of at the expense of the city due to lack of a damage deposit to recover these expenses from. So the proposed damage deposit fee will be refunded if the rented facility is left in the condition that they had it in prior to their event or during our pre-tournament or pre-event walkthrough. And during the Parks and Recreation Committee meeting a few weeks ago, we were reviewing the current 2022 pool season pass prices, and the committee felt that the individual cost of a season pool pass was set too high in comparison to the family pool pass. The committee suggested that the individual season pool pass be changed from $93.50 to $75. Attached is a comparison spreadsheet that presents to council the pool entry and season pass fees from the surrounding cities. 2022 is also the final year of our five-year price plan for Parks and Rec, so we'll be meeting many times in the near future to set the new five-year plan.
Thank you, Madison. I just want to appreciate, you know, tell you I appreciate you and the committee and the time you spent on this. I know part of where we run into difficulties, you know, as staff and also city council, is when, you know, when we have inconsistencies and we maybe out of line in some of our areas like we were with the pool, the individual pool pass. And so this is, so your work in this is just, is really going to be helpful, not only to the community, but also to the staff. So I just want to thank you for your help and support. And I think, Madison, you're asking us to adopt this resolution.
Correct.
Making these changes. So
yes.
Before we ask for a motion, is there any questions the council has for Madison?
I have a question.
Sure.
Good job. I know the last time you left here. What did I miss?
It's okay. Learning process.
It's pretty good.
Thank you.
Yeah, I was looking through the, do we not charge for our tennis courts when the school uses them?
We have an interlocal agreement.
Oh,
we don't charge them, and they don't charge us when we use their facilities.
Oh, yeah, I just didn't see the tennis courts on there. And like, that was going in. We got to that point with our ball fields when we redo our park. Or is that something that we're going to just hold? Because they have an interlocal agreement.
Well, the council sets that policy, but right now, that's what our policy is. If they want to use our fields, they're welcome to.
I mean,
at no charge.
Yeah, I'm not against it. I just didn't see it on the tennis courts on here. So.
But if they're scheduled, if you're there and they're scheduled, you got to go out.
Yeah, I mean, we do have a schedule. You got to be on it.
Yeah.
I see the shot there. I just didn't see the courts. But yeah, I'm fine. Which is great to support the tennis court.
Okay. That I'd entertain a motion then to adopt this resolution.
So the motion is going to be to.
It's going to be to
accept the 2022-01, repealing and replacing resolution 2018-02.
Yes. Yeah.
So that's,
that's
the
correct.
The motion's going to be made.
Yeah. Do you want to make it?
I just did.
I'll second.
Thank you. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Sorry.
Thank you.
Awesome. Item 4F, I'm going to ask Ann if you would address the council about the Housing Action Plan implementation grant application.
I will. So this is something that Talia and I worked on together, but she wasn't able to be here tonight, so I'm going to present it for you since I've been pretty involved in it. Department of Commerce, as you remember, gave us money to develop our housing action plan. That was very successful. They now have additional funds available for implementation of the housing action plan. So I wasn't really sure what to do with that. You know, you never like to turn down free money. So I reached out to Burke Consulting, who prepared our housing action plan, if they had any suggestions of what we could apply for this grant to do. And their suggestion was to apply to look into the multifamily tax exemption program through the state, which the way it works is you would designate areas that could be developed multifamily, and then they would be exempt from taxes for either 12 years or 20 years, depending on what they built there. Some of those units would need to be affordable, and we would set, you know, the city would set what, to what extent it's affordable. Does that mean, you know, the median income? Does that mean 80% of the median? What does that mean? So, I mean, just with that kind of a general explanation of what the multifamily tax exemption program is, the way we structured the grant is we said that the end product would be an ordinance ready to adopt. We'd go through the whole process. We didn't, in the grant application we wrote, we didn't promise that it would be adopted because we, you know, can't promise what you might like to do at that point. But I think it would be very beneficial to have somebody look into this program, what it would do for us, how much housing could it create, you know, what would be kind of the losses from the waived taxes for those years. So our request is to be able to apply for this grant. And then if we get the grant, then we'd move forward.
So the only loss would be the property tax, pretty much?
For either 12 years or 20 years, depending on how it was set up.
I did have a question about the property tax. So half of our property tax goes to the state for schools. So is the exemption only for the property tax they would pay, like to the city, or does the entire amount of their property tax, which includes the state's portion and the county's portion and everybody else's portion? Do you know?
I don't know that off the top of my head.
I'd like to know.
So we could move forward with this, but we wouldn't necessarily have to go with it. So it's just to figure out if we want to do this.
Mm-hmm. So basically, we're talking about one form of taxation, but in a housing development, or not a housing development, let's just say multifamily dwelling.
Apartment complex.
Yeah, big apartment complexes. Each individual pays for water, sewer, garbage. Mm-hmm. Each individual goes to the local stores and shops.
Right.
You know, so right. You're giving up a small portion of taxation for a larger, greater taxation. Mm-hmm. Plus, you're putting people into homes in our area for workforce. You know, which is another taxation, which is a 12-to-1 trickle down effect. So, you know, giving up that minute amount of property mm-hmm. tax, it's outweighed so much by what we generate in other taxation income.
You're absolutely right. You know, John, when you look at the, you know, our sources of revenue from property tax, from sales tax, and from, you know, utility tax, the property tax portion is so divided. There's already so many fingers in that pie. That we don't get as much out of that. But when you look at the spinoff, it is one, I think it's really, really well known around this city council that we have a tremendous need for multifamily housing. Yeah. And so this program, if we can add that exemption, would bring in, they would still pay their water bills, they would still pay utility bills, and they would shop here, and it would create a demand for more commercial development and other positive things that the community has been looking to find solutions for. So
it would help us grow our community too.
Yeah.
Because you know, then now there's a larger source of people here for restaurants and for, you know, other shopping.
You know, there's other bills on the table for low income tax relief for landlords that are going to rent out below market value their homes to help create affordable housing. So that could help spark some development, both family housing and rental units. And I forget the bill number, but I know it's out there.
Anyway.
So this before us then tonight is just authorizing the staff to apply for this HAPI grant.
Okay, so I'll make that motion to approve the submission of the HAPI grant application.
Second that motion.
Okay, thank you. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. As we continue on in our agenda, we're now down to item 4G, which is the park element. And there's been a lot of discussion and a lot of meetings held, but we do have a purpose here, and Ann's going to explain that.
So when you held the public hearing on the park plan, we hadn't yet had the map quite finished. So I wanted to bring you back the map as staff's prepared it, just to make sure there were no comments, questions, issues that we should address. And the other thing that I brought back is the capital facilities plan, capital improvement plan. I just, before it was kind of out of order based on what had been already adopted and the new things, and I just put it all in year order. So 2022, 23, 24, just so it's clear of what the priorities are. So I just wanted to bring those two items to you to make sure there's no questions, and then I'll bring back the full package for formal adoption at the last meeting in February. But I just wanted to get any questions out of the way sooner rather than later.
So, and this is necessary also because this is every 2 years we can apply for RCO grants.
Correct.
And mm-hmm. so we do need to update these items in order to continue to be eligible for grant money.
Right, that was the whole reason for adopting the updated park plan, is to remain eligible for RCO grants.
Okay.
You're just needing direction?
I'm just asking, do you have any questions, comments, any changes, or if it's good as it is, then we can just move forward with consensus. We don't need a motion or anything. I just wanted to bring it up as a formal item so that you could provide any comments.
So basically, this is just a snapshot in time at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And as we go along and we get grant funding for this or that, or we find a piece of property that is maybe more favorable than what you're showing on your map currently, we certainly can amend this plan to include a new project or
absolutely
a new location.
Mm-hmm.
So we're flexible here.
We're just needing to show RCO that we're planning for the next 6 years. This is a way that it could go.
Yeah.
And we're always free to make
so
changes.
So it's kind of like our streets doc, our 6 year streets program. It's a living document. It can be changed at any time.
Yes.
And altered at any time.
Yeah.
This is, yeah.
Yep. Added, subtracted.
Added, subtracted.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Good.
Okay.
We're
like
good.
It.
Thank you.
No comments.
Why don't you bring it back then at the end of the month for adoption? Thank you, Ann. And now we'll move to item 4H on our current business, which is amending OMC 2.62, emergency powers of the mayor, city council, and the city administrator. Councilman John Erickson had identified sections of our of this ordinance and policy since we had gone through this almost 2 years ago, when the mayor, with the approval of council, had adopted the state of emergency and corresponding emergency powers. And so, as Kelly had made a review, he had recommended some specific things. And Kelly, I believe you're on the phone call tonight to address the council.
That is correct. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
So, after taking a look at this issue, which is actually an interesting issue, very current issue in state government and other local governments at the municipal level, particularly with COVID, and having particularly governors of states issuing emergency orders and seemingly being unchecked by the legislature, it highlighted an issue that is out there. And so I took a look at the civil emergency provisions of the Pelham Municipal Code, and there is no provision for city council oversight of any mayor's use of the civil emergency powers. Staff agrees that there should be oversight there, and that's a good idea. And there's a number of ways that that can be done. I know that the model that is being proposed, I think the most popular model that is proposed for at the state level is to require the governor to periodically go back to Congress to seek, or to not Congress, but the legislature, to seek authority to extend the state of emergency. And it requires you to do that on an interval basis, him or her, whoever happens to be in the time. And we could, I mean, it's, you know, plausible to do that at the local city level, but because of the difference between the difference of size and nature of state government versus municipal government, I think one thing we need to do is provide that oversight to keep a mind on efficiency. Because we don't have, we mean the city of Othello doesn't have the same resources that are at the, you know, disposal of state government and the executive branch of state government. And so my thought, when I put this together, is when there's a state of emergency, because this is going to be a global application, not just in a situation like what we have with the COVID-19 situation, you know, because any number of other types of disasters, right? And I think to in any disaster or any state of emergency, to put, you know, particularly when it's new, like with we had with COVID, and there's so much unknown, it would be very difficult for a government the size of the city of Othello, I think, to be able to react nimbly and provide the kind of necessary information that if you could gather and present information that like state government can. However, we still need to have that oversight. And so the ordinance that I put together provides that, so the mayor has the same authority that he or she had prior to this amendment to proclaim a civil emergency. And then, but it also provides to the council that if the council members, you know, who are, you know, represent, they're the direct representatives of the citizens of Othello, if any council member wants to have that, bring that motion, or have that reviewed, then they, this ordinance or amendment to the municipal code gives the city council the authority to do that. And they can do that on the very day that the civil emergency is declared, or the next city council meeting where the civil emergency is declared. Now, because there is less known in some circumstances, such as with COVID-19, I guess is a good example, there is not a lot of information known that, yet, you know, we're appearingly under a state of emergency. There is, you know, of course, there's disagreeing opinions on that, but during the first 2 months of a civil emergency, you could still have the issue brought, you know, it could be brought to council, and it could, the civil emergency could be overturned with a two-thirds vote. And the idea of requiring a greater threshold in the first, you know, 2 months of an emergency is to account, you know, because if there is a situation, and we don't have the situation currently in the fellow, but, you know, when I'm putting together ordinances, I'm looking in the future. You know, I'm looking down 20, 30 years when none of us are going to be here working in city government anymore, situations that could arise. So if you have a situation where, say, something were to happen at Hammer, clearly, you know, and it was a big disaster, you know, it wouldn't be hard to convince people, right, that that's an emergency. But you still want to have that oversight. But what if there's something else? You know, what if there's something else that is not on that big of a scale? And, you know, and there's a, you know, the will of the council members is, what, this just does not even pass the smell test. Well, you shouldn't have to wait 2 months to get in there and have that challenge. But if it really is a matter that really should not be declared an emergency, then you can, that's why you would require a two-thirds vote just during that two-month time period. So you do have a mechanism where it is a clear or, a certain level of clarity that it shouldn't be an emergency, it can quickly be dealt with. And then after those first 2 months though, then you drop the vote threshold for overturning the civil emergency, and you do that at a time when more is known about whatever it is that's going on that's causing the emergency, and you know, are able to make a more well-informed decision. And that would give the city, I believe, very effective and efficient oversight. And when I mean efficient, I mean not only efficient in terms of speed, but also efficient in terms of cost and burden on staff. I guess I think the other part of this proposal that I'd like to talk about is what happens if a motion is brought to council to, you know, repeal a civil emergency, or to, you know, to end a state of civil emergency, and it fails. Well, I think in that situation, then it can be brought at the after three council meetings, it can be brought again. So basically, there'd be be a one-month free on bringing that motion again. But you could bring it the next month. And the idea behind that is that it provides, because we're in a state of emergency. One thing we do want is stability and certainty for at least chunks of time. They don't have to be really long chunks of time, but if you have that uncertainty every week and not know it's going to happen every week, or if you have staff time, you're taking up staff time every week to deal with, should there be a state of emergency, should there not, then it's already been proclaimed and it's already, more than half the council has agreed that, there is a state of emergency. It would be very distracting and very difficulty to staff ability to manage that emergency or just conduct business, regular business during that time. But there should be review. It shouldn't be, hey, if you lose it, you never come back. Because that would not, then you're defeating the purpose of having, in my opinion, defeating the purpose of having city council oversight. So this ordinance is my honest best attempt to provide very effective city council oversight of the declaration of the civil emergency, but also doing it in such a way that it isn't overly burdensome on staff, or rather, if the abuse could not be abused if we ever were in the future. Like I said, it's not a problem we have now. I'm looking for things down the road. But if we ever had somebody who wanted to use that as a way to frustrate the staff's ability to go about doing business, this would prevent that. But it still guarantees the oversight. So I'm happy to answer any questions that anybody has. And certainly, we can talk about any changes that anybody would like to see what I propose.
City Council?
I like what's prepared here, so.
I'll go with the recommendation.
Yeah, I'll go with the recommendation.
So basically, I think the frustration with us as a city government is watching how the governor has used his emergency powers to centralize authority. And so everything then comes out of his office, and there's no end in sight, it seems. And so we're here, it was sort of in the same manner, kind of crafted our ordinance. And after having, John bring it to our attention that we didn't need to make some changes, I think what we're doing here is the only change we're making to the ordinance is the on and off switch, and who has authority to do the on and off switch. And I think that rests, that authority, in order to have a proper check and balance in that authority, it needs to rest with the legislative body. So that's what adopting this ordinance is going to do, and I think that it'll help. I don't know that we're going to have another one, but during our time here, but it'll certainly help future city councils and mayors to navigate this, through this process. So that's all I had to say. Does anybody have something to add?
Yeah, and I think it's important for the public that's listening and online and here that we navigated, the mayor navigated through the civil emergency with little to no out of the norm operation. So when I brought this up, it was something I saw for future, like Kelly had said, and that had nothing to do with how we made it through our civil emergency here. I think the mayor did a fabulous job navigating through that. I did have a question for Kelly. Hey, Kelly, in the original language I sent over, I made mention at the bottom for the council having right to limit the mayor's civil emergency powers. And I had thrown that language in there to not to say, you don't have any civil, but give an extent or a cap on what could be done. Is that kind of counterproductive to the language you have there?
Well, that would, if you want to restrict the, you know, the scope of authority once for the mayor, once the civil emergency has been proclaimed, that would be a different amendment. You know, this, what this does is it gives council oversight on how long a civil emergency remains, right? And that's what this does. It doesn't provide over, it doesn't restrict the scope of the powers that the ordinance already gives, or the code already gives to the mayor once the emergency has been declared. You know, if you call, the ordinance, I don't have it called up, but the ordinance does provide, you know, the set up the instances in which a civil emergency can be declared, as well as the scope of the mayor's powers while a civil emergency is in place. Now, council can, does have the authority to make changes to those provisions as well, but my, and I didn't really look at that, and the reason being that my understanding of the biggest concern, and certainly my biggest frustration that I've had dealing with this whole pandemic thing and what we've had, what we've experienced at the state level, is the fact that the legislative body in that situation, essentially has little or no oversight of when the state of emergency ends. So that's why I approached it that way. But that, you know, if there's proposals to make other changes, that can be done.
So would that be done in a different part of the ONC? And I guess for council, I'll give an example. The mayor declares an emergency, and right now it gives a broad range of powers, and we can say, yeah, we'll grant you the power, or, you know, we'll do that, with the exception is you cannot stop the sale of firearms. You can't, you don't have the power to do that. You know, that was kind of, you know, you could, for whatever the situation may be. You know, yeah, there's a potential, there's gonna be a ton of sick people. Mayor, you have the authority to go out and spend money to keep the city running without council approval, but you can't stop the sale of firearms, you know, things like that. That was the intent behind that whole clause. However, if it doesn't fit in this ONC section, then you know, something you could do.
Well, the thing is,
we can review the other.
Let's say, let's use your example. So let's say that happened, and you find out the next week the mayor's issued an order. Okay, well, the council can come back at the very next meeting and with a two-thirds majority vote say, okay, no emergency, and then that effectively stops the mayor from going in.
Yeah. Order.
Yeah, you're right. Okay. Yeah.
I think the officer right. Okay. is way better.
Meeting in that room.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I just wanted to add another piece to that, John, too, is that it, by simply, and you see there's a lot in government, but simply by the fact that you give the city council authority over whether an emergency exists, you know, at all, and if the mayor is going to issue something that the council doesn't like, you're right, the council can come back and vote to terminate the civil emergency. But also beyond that, that's not really city council's only redress. Its only redress is not to necessarily terminate the declaration of civil emergency. They also, it gives them, because they do have that right and power to do that, they can also code, you know, work out a deal with the mayor, like, you know, look, we will keep this civil emergency, allow it to stand, but you have to not do X, Y, Z.
That's politics. That's political.
Providing that oversight.
Okay.
Good. Yeah. Kelly, thanks, boss.
It's not at all or nothing with the emergency.
Thank you.
We'll make a deal with it.
Right. Yep. Okay. So, do we want to go ahead and adopt this change?
I'll make the motion to adopt ordinance 1577 adopting ONC 2.62045 pertaining to council's oversight of civil emergencies.
Thank you.
Second.
Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Shall we move to our unfinished business? I have a couple items. Does council, do you guys have any? Okay. Chief, there was a question about the Broadway stoplights, and you want to give the council what you found out?
Yes, Mayor and Council, I apologize for missing that council meeting where I could have answered then. Quite a few years ago, we were receiving a lot of complaints of semi-trucks blowing through the light north-south on Broadway at Main Street. We tried enforcement. We put out the traffic counters. We did what we could trying to address that. We were not able to address that. And so I worked with Terry, our public works director, to try a solution, and that was to shorten the time that the light would be green north-south and increase the amount of time that it would be green east-west, so that more the semis would have to stop, or fewer semis would make it through, so they would, we wouldn't always have the last two trying to make it through. It's been successful. We haven't been receiving complaints of the semis blowing through that intersection since then. I would urge council to leave it as it is. I'm not sure what the nature of the complaint was or who's complaining, but that was done deliberately to address an issue. That is a traffic light that doesn't have sensors, so it's strictly on a timer.
We were only looking for an explanation. One of the council members noticed that it was quite a long time, almost 2 minutes, so he was just wondering why.
It's on Longview going south and north, north and south. Gives them more time, right?
No, it actually gives them less time to go north-south. It gives a lot of time for traffic to go east-west towards Edson.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So if you're sitting on Broadway and you're trying to get through Broadway, you could wait quite a while.
But if it stops them from blowing through that light?
It has significantly helped the situation.
Then it was just Martha's made a comment, and then I think I made a comment. I think we were just looking to check it out. Make sure that it was doing what we were.
But if it's doing good, we're good with it.
Yeah.
It's doing what we intended.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Chief, while you were here, so you can go, another issue was noise. I was reading through our noise ordinance, 5.38010, and I'm sure this is no stranger to staff here that I'm convinced, my office sits on Main Street, that they're teasing you in these vehicles and these loud exhausts. They're teasing you.
We have a couple new offenders that have obviously got Christmas presents installed in their cars. We took note of that a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, and I have asked my officers to refresh their memory on the ordinance and to start aggressively enforcing it. So I've already brought that to my staff's attention. Okay. And I've noticed it too. My windows.
Today was just silly. I saw two Zoom calls and they're like, where are you at? Thanks, Chief.
Another question that had been brought up was about the population signs. And Tanya, you had a update for the city council about that. Thank you. Is there any new business to come before the council tonight?
What are we doing, any striping or roof for City Hall or parking? Striping or not?
Yeah, the pre-painted.
When are we going to, do we have
we'll probably do that in the spring.
Yeah. Once a month.
It's like sort of gone already.
You guys should look at some sort of finish on the sidewalks, you know, because whatever you put out there really ate them up. And maybe a seal coat on the parking lot itself, and then we stripe it. It is a city hall.
Yeah. Well,
so we
when you're saying sidewalks, you're talking about the sidewalks immediately around the, around City Hall?
The visible aggregate poking through the sidewalks. Now, if there's something that can be done with that, with a coating?
I'm not aware of there being...
I think they've been like that since, what, the year, first year they were put in, somebody put salt on them and they immediately...
Actually, what happened, I came to the opening of the City Hall here and they, and their grand opening was in December. And they were in a big hurry to get everything ready for that, and they poured it and it froze. And so from the very get-go, it all chipped up and it was visible.
I think they put salt on it too that first year.
Probably did.
So...
So anyway, I don't like it anymore than you do, John. I think, I mean, the next step would be, as we go through our budget processes next year, we could price out sidewalk around City Hall. As far as seal coating, I always am in favor of doing things like that because it preserves it.
Seal for the asphalt?
For the asphalt.
For the parking lot.
Yeah, it'd look good if you seal it and then stripe it.
And then stripe it.
It'd look good, yeah, nice.
Just like what McDonald's did on their place. They just poured the oil out and striped it.
A slurry seal would be that, the process you're talking about, and it's, doesn't do rock chips or anything. It's just a black slurry.
It's just a black, yeah, we do it every few years at the office too, and then put new stripes on.
That's, I mean, I would suggest we probably want to stripe it this year, but then a slurry would be something that we'd budget for in one of the following years. I don't think COVID money or ARPA money.
We'd have to restripe it if we do it, you know, if we decide to seal it next year. They'd have to pay restripe it again.
That would be...
So if we get it in at the same time, it'd be better if it's in the budget. I don't know what, I don't think it's too expensive.
We could get a quote, and if council wants to approve it, that's fine. It's not in the budget, but we could get a quote. Yep, we'll work on that.
You'll be painting buildings down at Public Works sometime soon, won't you?
That, I think, is in the work schedule this year.
Okay.
Yep.
You gonna go with the brown color from...
Yeah, we're gonna make it look the same, yeah. Okay, so then, is there any other new business, council? All right, then let's move to item seven. And in council, that, in that the council will receive the building and planning report, planning commission minutes, the Othello legislative report, and the clerk report. And having no further business to come before the council, I'll adjourn tonight's meeting at 6:58 p.m.
This conference is no longer being recorded.